Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, joins us. J.P., welcome to the show.
Thanks, Noel. Happy to be here.
J.P., I wanted to start out. You were a former state legislator. What are your concerns relative to this constitutional convention idea that's being floated and bannered around the state legislature? I know that there's an attempt to approve same. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, and you're a former sheriff, I think that what people don't understand is that there are a lot of things that are in the Constitution for a reason. For example, the funding of public education at all is in the Constitution. It is required. When you open it up, I know that there are representations of, well, we're going to do a limited constitutional convention. No, that's absolutely false. There's no such thing as a constitutional convention with rails. And once you open it up, what you allow is a tremendous amount of potential of special interest to really go in and really move things around very, very substantially. There are a lot of powers that are reserved to parish government and police juries, city councils around the whole state. There could be an effort very easily to take all power locally across the entire state and centralize it in Baton Rouge. And that's not just a fear that New Orleans should have. It's a fear every parish should have, and that government that governs closest is usually what government that governs best. But, I mean, generally speaking, like, we've had this constitutional debate for years. A lot of the people that are there are the ones who've argued for it for years. And the fact that when they're under oath in committee, they can't even tell you specifically what they want to change, that should be a tremendous red flag to people. Because though they talk about in broad terms the things they could change, they talk about having flexibility in the budget, they're not really saying specifically what they want to change. All they're saying is, let's open up the Constitution and trust us. And for anyone who's dealt with Baton Rouge, I mean, you've heard the saying, the state is most safe when the legislature is not in session. You're talking about the legislature, the current legislature, rewriting every aspect of how our state constitution governs your entire life, not just the money pieces.
Jim Tucker, who you know, he served as House Speaker from 2008 to 2012. He said any fears are unfounded because what Landry and Beaulieu are proposing is not a rewrite of the Constitution, but merely a change in process. There is no haste here to change anything of substance. Then why the necessity if we're not going to change anything of substance?
Well, I mean, and not just that. No, remember, they want to do a constitutional convention in 2 weeks. I mean, in 1974, they had meetings around the state. It took over a year to do a constitution rewrite. 3 years, sorry. There you go. 3 years. So if you're going to tamper with the state constitution and they want you to trust them and they only want a 2 week period to do it, that, I mean, if every red flag, if every blare is not going off in your head, you're talking about the legislature, most of whom really want to go home, being stuck in a room for 2 weeks, simultaneously doing the budget, and you're going to let them rewrite the Constitution and just hope it turns out okay. I mean, there are a lot of things the governor has done, support or not support, that are transformative, that people have had a lot of issues with the speed in which he's done it. But comparatively, this would be like rewriting the U.S. Constitution using Congress in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't make you slightly nauseous, that would be, I think you need to get your head checked.
Well, I'm going to ask you this because, you know, I've gone on record of saying the following. I believe that this is a defining moment in leadership, and that if members of the state legislature actually vote to move forward with this change in this process and the manner in which we're doing it, they don't even have, we're just a few days beyond 30 days of starting this, and there's no agenda, as you pointed out. There's no wish list. We get pieces and parts of what people are thinking about moving from the state constitution to state statute. We don't know whether or not the modification of same is going to require a supermajority vote. I believe that I could tell you right now, if my state legislator votes for this, I will never vote for that person again, ever. And I think, like you, this is bigger than the city of New Orleans. Every local government representative needs to be very concerned about where this is headed and why. I don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe that they don't have the agenda. I think they know exactly what it is that they want to do, how they want to go about doing it. They're just not willing to share it with the public. And they keep saying, well, you know, the public has an opportunity to vote this down in the fall. I don't want that opportunity in the fall. I want that opportunity right now. I want to be able to talk about what is being thought about, you know, what they're contemplating moving from the state constitution to revised statute. Your thoughts? Am I overstating this?
No, you're absolutely not. I mean, I'll give you a great example, because one of the big issues we had for years, because it's an issue we've all debated literally the whole time I was in the legislature. When you say, well, the public has a right to vote, the public will also be inundated with a media campaign by every special interest group to influence their vote in a rush vote this fall. If you want to change the Constitution, do with it in 74, educate the public, have a 2-3 year period where everyone can weigh in and make it transparent. I'll give you a great example, and you can speak to this, Newell, because you were there. There has been this zeal by large corporations to move towards centralized sales tax, where they get to negotiate how they're going to interact and fund local government through the state of Louisiana, not local government. And the Sheriff's Association has done a yeoman's task of fighting that for decades with the advent of the internet. And we know that because you knew when internet sales tax became a thing, the state Department of Revenue was repeatedly not auditing large corporations that were running small companies out of business by simply underpaying their sales tax. And in particular, when you were there, I know Sheriff LaPinto has done it as well, they go check the receipts and they get those millions of dollars that Walmart doesn't want to pay, but that the guy in the tool shop down the street is paying properly because they have a brick and mortar location and they're being outsold by Walmart, who has a combination of internet and physical sales tax. Local governments are the ones that go and say, you're going to pay the same sales tax as Ace Hardware. When you remove that power and the corporations are just negotiating with the governor and the state legislature, they're going to cut the deal that's best for the state, not best for the locals. And what you're going to see is state government will get more money, local government will get less money. And I mean, let's be very clear, and I know Lawrence Trahardy is going to probably call in on this, they will get rid of the homestead exemption. So the homestead exemption that you currently enjoy, the first thing they're going to do in that 2 weeks is get rid of it. It'll be gone.
Well, I've been very suspicious of that. And that's why I keep asking folks, members of this legislative body right now, why is there not an agenda? What are the issues, the touchstone issues that are hands off? It's like, and I told them all, I said, I promise you this, I'm coming. If they end up doing these things that impede the operation of local government, because that local government is what makes the world zing, right? That is the easiest way to resolve issues that you have in your local community is local government, not state government, not the federal government. And, you know, the moment that we try to consolidate that authority at the state level. It's a dangerous proposition. And, you know, and what's the irony when you talk about taxing, why would we, they keep saying that we need more flexibility in budgeting, right? And that's why we have to move these things to the revised statutes and out of the state constitution. Why don't we address the $7.2 billion in tax exemptions that we have in this state first? And let's see how much latitude and how much flexibility that in turn gives us, you know, as it relates to that issue. But we don't want to do that because we would piss off all the special interests, right? And nobody wants to talk about that. We have tax exemptions that have been on the books since the 1950s that don't even remotely serve the purpose that they were given for in the first place in 1950. But folks still enjoy these tax exemptions.
You're 100% right again. As you may recall, when I was in the legislature and I was over Reverend Fisk, I tried to tackle tax reform. Jack Donahue, who was in the Senate as well before me, tried to tackle tax exemptions. And I mean, just when we did our tax exemption review, the amount of exemptions that are, I mean, there was an exemption until we got rid of it to buy yachts and antique airplanes. And by antique airplane, the definition newel was an airplane older than 10 years old. So you had people that were buying yachts and private planes that were modern private planes, and they were getting tax breaks for it. And that's the tax code, which is in statute, is littered with these. And to your point, I know there's this huge push to go towards vouchers for private education, but I don't think people understand that if you just defund public education to do that, you're going to implode the availability for children to be educated in the entire state of Louisiana. There's not enough private schools for all the public school kids. So if you just take all the money off the budget to fund the private schools that may or may not prop up, you're talking about basically leaving a tremendous swath of children throughout the state with no education whatsoever, because there's a reason why eons ago they put education and other things, parts of education, in the Constitution. Now, mind you, higher education gets slayed because it's not in the Constitution. But to your point, the fact there's no agenda, and I'll remind everyone, there is no way to do a constitutional convention and say these are sacred cows. That's not the way calling the convention works. They can promise it's a sacred cow and say, we're not going to touch these things, but it's like open heart surgery, but with someone who's not a surgeon. If you crack open the body, yeah, you could tinker with the heart, but if you're a kind of an incompetent person, you're also tinkering with all the rest of the organs and the whole thing may fall apart. That's kind of what a constitutional convention is, especially one without a specific goal. And the fact they won't articulate to the public what the goal is, because even if they articulated specifically what they were going to do, Newell, then the legislators and the public could say, you're only going to do this because you told us you're only going to do this. But they're not even doing that. They're just saying, yeah, we're going to generally, these are the areas that we're concerned with. I have to remind people constantly because there's kind of a fixation on, well, this is the way they're going to do X in New Orleans or not in New Orleans. This is not about New Orleans. A constitutional convention is about fundamentally everything that is in this state. And what you have to understand is that with a legislature in a non-transparent process, special interests and lobbyists are going to run rampant dictating what stays in and what goes out. And you may have statutory tax exemptions that the legislature needs to have flexibility with that they might put in the Constitution. What happens if all these, that $7.1 billion you're talking about, Newell, what if they put it in the new Constitution?
Well, look, I mean, let's look at two of the biggest proponents, Lane Grisby and Eddie Rasponi. We know exactly what they seek to achieve. You heard it every year when you were in the state legislature, right?
Right. I mean, it's basically the idea is that the government exists for businesses to be successful at the cost of everything else. When you look at a lot of the tension, and government works in this regard, especially on the local level. When y'all are doing, for example, inventory tax reviews at the local level, the local sheriff and whatever other authorities, they're taking stock of the inventory and levying taxes appropriately on it. If you take all of that and give it to the state, then your sheriff in Jefferson Parish, in Lafourche, in St. Tammany, your government that is negotiating and fighting with businesses on your behalf to make sure they pay appropriate revenue, they're going to sidestep all of them completely and go to the legislature and Jeff Landry, and then they're going to dictate what you get. I'll give you another great example. Zoning authority for local governments is protected because either it's protected by charter in the Constitution or zoning abilities are not explicitly given to the legislature in the Constitution. Let's say you live in St. Tammany and you don't want the Amazon or the new complex to go up. What if the legislature gives itself zoning authority in the Constitution?
What if they give the Louisiana Economic Development zoning authority? Already, you know, they've done away with the job requirement. Why? Because you have to articulate that you've created this many number of jobs and that they stay in place for this length of period of time. They don't like that. Well, what was interesting is no one's taken under consideration that if you are a manufacturer in this state, you are exempt from sales tax because you're selling a good for reuse. It doesn't end up with the ultimate consumer, so it's not considered a transaction for purposes of sales taxes. If you exempt property taxes and all other taxes and there's no job requirement, there's no government look-see on a manufacturing plant in this state of Louisiana. And we keep saying we want the Texas model, but that's not how the Texas model works.
No.
They cherry-pick the Texas model. We don't want the Texas model. We want all of the beneficial things of the Texas model, but not those that benefit local government.
Well, you know, in the Texas model, the state of Texas is very aggressive on tax collection when it comes to property tax and everything but income tax. So the reason why the Texas model works is there's not overall less taxes. It's just the taxes are done in a very specific, very different specific way. There's no homestead exemption in Texas. You pay every dollar of that house you own. You can't transition to that model without adopting the whole Texas model. You can't take part of it. And the challenge becomes, like, to your point, even the ability, going back to zoning, even the ability for local governments to self-determine what types of industries are in their parishes or in their regions, all of that could be undermined. Right now, there are not a tremendous amount of chemical plants along Mississippi that are located next to major metropolitan areas. Yet, there has always been a desire for a lot of these industries, especially ones that produce things that we all don't want to have near our homes, to have more opportunities along the Mississippi River. If you give unlimited authority to the Department of Economic Development to negotiate directly with corporations and large companies to build plants wherever they want, you could do that in the Constitution. You could say, you know what? They can pretty much do whatever they want, and their authority trumps local government. Put it in the Constitution. And that's what it is.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this plays out. I believe it's one of those defining moments that, and I can tell you, it will dictate who I vote for next time. If my local legislators vote for this to move forward in the fashion that they proposed today, I will not vote for that person. Not again. Not ever. That's how strongly I feel about this situation.
The thing we're all going to be looking at, Newell, if this happens 4 to 5 years from now, is when things go awful, how politicians try to spin it wasn't their fault.
Right.
Because everything we're talking about, these are not like, you do not require a degree from MIT to see why this could go bad. Everyone around you is telling you, I promise you, and you know this, every sheriff, every DA, every police jury member is probably individually calling their legislators to say, do not do this. And if they do this, it will literally be over the objection of local government. Now, many of them aren't going to publicly come out against it because they're terrified of Jeff Landry. But every local government is watching this and is tremendously concerned. And if they do this, and if it goes as badly as you and I are talking about in this kind of Nostradamus conversation, you will see a slew of people trying to explain in 4 years, in 8 years, why it's not their fault. I mean, it goes back to the fact that, you know, with a lot of the different policies that have been implemented and the price tags on it, we knew there was going to be a deficit when the sales tax fell off. But, I mean, economists I've spoken to have said we're looking at almost a $1 billion deficit between new things we've spent money on and the sales tax falling off. If you know all this is coming, how do you pretend? I mean, it's sort of like how there was a tremendous amount of fighting during the Jindal administration, and you saw it because I was up there, where a lot of people, both Republicans and Democrats, saw the pawn shop era of government, how it was going to end badly. And everyone up there who voted with Governor Jindal at the time to make a lot of boneheaded decisions, they spent a tremendous amount of time trying to tell the public, well, we didn't know that was going to happen. We have history, recent history, to show that these decisions, these votes, they all really matter when it comes to the health of the state. And if you decide to make a bad vote because politically expedient, at some point it's going to get bad enough the public's going to call you on it, and imploding the ability of your state governments to operate, allowing for the expansion of different large corporations in the areas to do different kind of industrial plants, for example, in areas where they wouldn't normally be allowed to go. You can't then claim, because you're a legislator and Department of Economic Development did it over your objection, you're absolved of it. Well, you're the one that let them do it. You're the one that gave them the authority to do these things they couldn't do before.
Yeah, we're going to continue to talk about this. We're going to continue to hold people accountable. I remember the Jindal years. He offered up the elixir. We drank it, and we all fell off the cliff together. And, you know, and for years in the aftermath of that, folks were like, oh, we can't have that happen again, of what happened in the Jindal years. Sounds to me like we're going down this path yet again. You know, I guess institutional memory has subsided. You know, as to
it's been a decade since Jindal, Newell. So, I mean, that's about what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. JP, as always, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. We truly appreciate it. I knew that you would have an inside perspective on this situation, and we appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Well, thanks. Have a great day.
JP Morrell, member of the New Orleans City Council. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, folks, I intend to call out the legislators that vote on this. House Bill 800 is being heard in committee today. The author of that bill is Representative Bo Lu. He represents the parishes of Iberia, Lafayette, and St. Martin Parish. He is located at New Iberia. You can just Google him. His phone number's there. You can call him and let him know what you think about this issue. And we will call out House and Governmental Affairs, the committee. He is the chairman as to the votes that they take today. And we'll continue to call out each and every one of the legislators that vote on this issue. That's how important I think this is, that we're taking a haphazard way and approach to it. And here to talk to us a little bit more about this is Andronica Morris, Executive Director for Housing NOLA. Andronica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Newell. Thanks for having me back.
So, Andronica, obviously, you've been looking at this very closely as well. A lot of different agency heads, local government and others. Some are willing to stand up and say something. Others not so much. What say you?
We say that this is a terrible idea, the way that this is being done, and we're not sure we're going to get any of the changes that we need to our Constitution. Everyone agrees that our Constitution needs to be changed, but there is something to be said for process, and there's something to be said for clear intent. And what we're hearing, what we heard yesterday in particular, is this is all about money and power. This is about cracking into protected pots of money, like protected pots of money around education that will actually impact our rural school systems disproportionately if those funds are no longer protected, making it easier for the legislature and for the governor to put in place things that protect corporations and remove, in the name of deregulation, protecting corporations and removing our protections, people's protections. And we've seen that as this legislature has rushed through bill after bill after bill to help insurance companies and done very little to help consumers. And this is one more shrimp on that body. And we can't let it. We cannot do this way. Not in the name. If we're talking about protecting the people of Louisiana, this is not how we do this.
No, I agree. In fact, I got someone who says, Newell, who are your representatives? Mine is the president of the Senate, Cameron Henry, and Lori Schlegel is my representative. And I can promise you, if either one of these folks vote for House Bill 800, I will not ever vote for them again. Because I think, as you, I suspect, Andronika, they're shortchanging public input in this expedited fashion that's being laid out. They don't want to hear from us. They don't want to hear from us until everything is ultimately done, and then they put it up for a vote for us, put it up for a vote where it's going to be a very – I don't know how it's going to be presented on the ballot, right?
Right.
and no one has explained how – that right. I mean, there's an art to how these things are presented on a ballot, right? Either this is going to be the longest ballot.
Governor is,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Former Attorney General Landry is very familiar with the art of crafting ballot initiatives. That's the Attorney General's job. That's part of their job. And you were going there to the other place is that this can't be the first time people see the substance of this Constitution cannot be in a ballot box. And that's what this is set up for. There's no other way for the average citizen to engage around this in the process that they're laying out. There's not going to be any opportunity for extended hearings, for testimony, for community input and outreach. I mean, when we change the every 10 years, when we change the maps for the census, there's actually a roadshow. There's a lot of conversation that's happening. Why in the world would we do anything less for changing a document that's 50 years old? Why would we, something we do every 10 years takes months, years of time and deliberative community engagement so people know that it's going on. And we actually pay people to go talk to people to do the census. And changing the state constitution is something we're going to get done in 2 weeks with some people, with 2/3 of a legislature that were elected by default.
So you raise an important issue that I've not really thought about, whether or not there's legally that there's this notion of a limited constitutional convention and whether or not there's any precedent for that.
Right.
That's kind of has anyone really defined what a limited constitutional convention is?
Well, that's also a big part of the problem. There's just not real clarity around what is going to be, what does it mean to even limit it, and then what's off the table. They've made it very clear this is about money. Neil Abramson yesterday, one of the few clear comments he made was about doing this on this time frame to address budgetary shortfalls. That's one of the clearest statements I've heard about what they intend to do. Now, they don't talk about what that means, right? Does that mean the homestead exemption is going to be up for grabs? Because if we get rid of insurance and income taxes, we've got to make up those shortfalls in other ways, right? And then how does that decision happen in less than 2 weeks? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo?
Well, but you know what's interesting to me is that we already know that we've got a $500 million deficit, according to Abramson in his comments. He said next year. And that's not even taken into consideration things that this legislative body's passing right now to actually increase that deficit. So whether you're you're for or against educational voucher, that actually has some cost to it. Some say it could be as high as $300 million. That's added to the deficit. So we're very concerned about changing the Constitution in order to give us more flexibility as to where to make cuts during a legislative session that we're actually increasing the amount of the deficit. How do we square that up? I mean, that sounds like hypocrisy to me.
Right. I mean, and again, this is what I was talking about earlier. We're continuing to make choices in the name of deregulation to help corporations, and we're losing protections for ourselves. Brake tags is a perfect example of this. Legislature is moving to get rid of brake tags. And most people know one of the things that we're concerned about insurance beside the homes is car insurance. Uninsured motorists is one of the biggest costs that we have with car insurance. And one tool that people have to keep unsafe cars off the road are brake tags. In addition to the fact that it actually generates revenue for the state, as much as people don't like these kinds of things, we've got to get folks thinking about not just the inconvenience of these kinds of protections, but the protection in the protection, right? The fact that law enforcement can see a car that doesn't have a brake tag on it and say, hey, this car's got to get off the road. It's a real easy way to make sure that unsafe cars aren't on the road.
I think that bill is going to get parked, and is where I understand, because they can't find the dollars to make up for the dollar for the loss of the revenue there, much like a lot of other things that are being passed. And obviously, they put the burden on local government to pay for a whole lot of these other things that they pass up there. And that's the danger of when the state legislature goes into session. And it's going to be, I just don't like where we're about 35, 36 days out from when they want to start this thing. And we have no agenda. We have no list of items that we desire to move from constitutional protection to revised statute. And when I hear Neil Abramson, very smart person, and others talk it in this way that we shouldn't be concerned because we're not really doing anything of any consequence, according to Jim Tucker, there is no haste here to change anything of substance. Then why are we doing it?
Exactly. And again, I mean, it's all how you define substance. They made it very clear they're worried about budgetary shortfall. $500 million is substantive to me, substantive to you. It's substantive to the people of Louisiana. That is substantive. And we just need them to be clear about this. And why not turn this into a study resolution? Why not figure this out? It took 3 years last time. Maybe we don't have to do 3 years, but we shouldn't do less than 3 weeks. That's where we are right now. We're talking about doing this in less than 2 weeks.
Vacation? I'm going to say this again, not to repeat myself ad nauseum. If my legislators vote for this House Bill 800 by Bolu, not voting for them ever again. And that's how strongly I feel about this issue. And folks, if you've never called your legislator before, now's the time to call your legislative representative. And local government better be awake at the wheel, because this is not going to be pretty for them by any stretch of the imagination in my mind. And
right.
We'll see. We'll see what the call is. But they're not limited to that. I mean, so even if they put out the agenda, the list, once you open that door, there's, you know, who knows what legislator is going to end up introducing something, amending something, doing otherwise. It just doesn't seem right to the public that we not having an opportunity to weigh in. As always, Andra Nikomaris,
that's
appreciate
right.
your time, your insight. Have a great week. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for joining in. Thank you for having me, Newell. Appreciate it.
Andra Nikomaris, Executive Director for Housing NOLA. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Three former state representatives who co-chaired Landry's Transition Committee on Revising the Constitution, Leland Petrie, Jim Tucker, and Neil Abramson, also tried to mollify critics by saying that their plan does not call for adding anything new to the existing Constitution that voters adopted in 1974. Instead, the three men said that their plan is to have convention delegates remove a number of unspecified items from the Constitution and put them into statutes so that legislators could have greater freedom to change laws. But what they're not saying is that the whole impetus to amend the Constitution was they didn't want legislators to have freedom to change that. They wanted the constitutional protection. They didn't want it to be up for grabs every year to be used as a bargaining chip by legislators and governors in order to get what it is that they wanted to get, in order to try and put together votes by threatening to remove that funding from some of the fundamental programs that we have in this state that's important to us. They don't say that. It's not about adding anything new. It's about protecting what the public has spoken on already. Why are they not telling the truth? These folks know that. They know very well how a number of these issues are used. In the realm of policing, for example, state supplemental pay was always an issue that they browbeat everyone in order to curry favor on other pieces of legislation, or they would do away with it. And it got to the point that firefighters, law enforcement, first responder community, and others grew weary of having to play these silly-ass games with the legislature and governors for a number of years, and they put it in the Constitution to protect it. They don't talk about that. They don't want to have go up there and get beat up every year and try to use the power that these associations have for whatever other bill that they want. That has nothing to do with law enforcement, or otherwise they're going to cut state supplemental pay. If that's what you want, then let your legislator go run amok on this issue, because that's exactly what they are attempting to do. And the reason they want this now is that the governor's got the power of the purse, and he's already polling individuals. If you're not with me on HB 800, you're not going to get this, you're not going to get this, that. This is a very transactional body at the present time, both the administration and the state legislature. And guess who's not involved in the transaction? You and me. There are promises being made, and the only way that you can counteract those promises that are being made in Baton Rouge is to make the promise, like I just did, that I will not vote for my senator nor my House member, Cameron Henry, Lori Schlegel, if they vote for HB 800. Plain and simple. Make those calls. That's how you make a difference. Scoot's up next. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
We'll talk about the Pelicans loss, man. That was really ugly. Also, the legislature talking about a bill that might exclude some areas when it comes to constitutional carry.
All right. Scoot's headed your way, folks. Stay tuned. He's got a great lineup. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We will see you guys again in the morning. Have a great Wednesday evening.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.